Hello, discerning podcast listeners. This is Tom Kenny, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
You are now on the inside of what I like to call the circle of trust. We are all connected in the great circle of life.
You know something, Bert?
What?
I think you and I are going in circles.
It feels like we're going in circles.
The circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Because it's a circle.
Yeah, we heard about the circle.
Yes, we're familiar with shapes.
Hi, this is Greg.
This is Chuck.
And this is Dan, and we are Talking in Circles, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network, the podcast that's all about the best rivalries in comics, because today we are doing another one of our top fives as we count down our top five favorite comic book character rivalries. But before we get to that, how's the week been going for you guys?
My week was, I guess, kind of boring. I don't know. Nothing really exciting happened.
You got to tell the Primanti Brothers story.
What Primanti Brothers story?
You know, the Primanti Brothers story of the guy.
How we waited for an hour outside the...
No.
The dude.
Yeah, the guy that brought over the food.
Oh, I almost forgot about that. That's right. So, yeah, when we did the... Last time we were all together, I guess, Dan was in town, and we went to this new place, Primanti Brothers, that was made famous in Pittsburgh. Sort of famous for putting French fries and coleslaw on their sandwiches and just kind of jamming everything in there. So definitely sounds like our kind of place. So we go, and it was like, the place has only been open like 2 weeks, so it's like crowded every single night. So we go there and we wait like an hour to get a table, and we finally get in there and order our food and everything. And we're waiting like, what would you say, 20 minutes maybe? Something like that.
Probably around that, if not a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think someone had brought you another drink, Dan, and then like a second guy comes over and he has like three plates of food. And he's like whispering to the dude that brought you the drink. And the guy's like, I don't know, it's not my table. And so the guy's like, he looks so confused. And the first guy walked away, and the guy holding the food walks up to the table. And he's like, how long ago did you guys order? He's like, do you think that your food would be ready by now?
As if we're being tested. And it's like, if you get it wrong, you don't get your food. It's like, nope, it wouldn't be. This isn't for you. Like, yeah. It was very...
And we're all like, maybe, I guess. And I'm like, okay, well, what dishes do you have? What things do you have? And he's like, oh, well, you know, I have this burger and I have this sandwich and this sandwich. And we're all like, yep, that's what we ordered. Oh, great.
Don't know why he didn't open with that. Like,
right, what lead off with that, like, instead of, you think it would be. So then, like, every time the guy walked by our table, like, Greg would start cracking up because he could see him coming, and all we could do is picture him, like, asking us more questions. Oh, it's pretty hilarious.
Is this about the time you would be done eating food? I mean, what exactly is that? Yeah.
Do you think this would be about how much your bill should be? Like, like, when you usually go out with three of you, is this about what it is? Like, I don't know. Like, no, it's usually like $20 cheaper.
Yeah. Do you guys usually drink this many beers when you're out?
Yes. And by the way, I got way too much flack for not having a beer from two different ways.
Yeah, which was like, man, all over the place. Jeez.
But... Yeah, I was getting it from both angles, but
which usually is a good thing. But what are you gonna do?
Right, it's usually a good thing with attractive waitresses, but they were pestering me for not getting a beer, and I was like, I don't really want to because I'm not comfortable driving and everything. And they're like, oh, that's what Uber's for. I'm like, what the freak?
Yeah, 45 minute Uber drive. That's exactly what I want. My life right now. Ah, oh, very nice, very nice.
And then leave my car there.
Perfect.
I come back and like be up on blocks and all the wheels are gone.
I feel like it's kind of been a week of people not being able to do things correctly because I've come to the determination that there are very few people in the world, at least that I drive near, that have any idea what to do when you get to a four-way stop. Like the amount of people that seem to be super confused over the proper order of how things go is insane to me. So recently we had really bad like hailstorms. Actually, we had this really horrible thunderstorms that went through and it knocked out a few power lines. So a number of traffic lights went out. And most people, if you're smart, what happens if you're at a four-way stop where there's no traffic lights? Act like it's a stop sign. The amount of people who don't know that's the thing you're supposed to do. Actually, I heard someone at work today saying, like, you think there would be, like, a law or a rule that what would happen if the power went out and the streetlights weren't working? I'm like, there is.
There is. Wow.
And also, when I drive to work, I found this great back way so I can get around traffic, which can be awful. But part of it is I drive near a school and there's a four-way stop there. And it's insane to me how many people can't operate it. For some reason, a lot of people treat it like a red light in the sense of I'm turning left and the person behind me is turning right. So they think that means that they can just turn right as if it was a red light and completely screws up everything because then I get stuck there because technically it's the other person's turn now because someone on my side already went. And it's just like this conundrum of crappiness that occurs. Not to mention that it's a crosswalk, or not a crosswalk, but there's a cross guard there that stops traffic at times for kids, like they should. But the amount of people who don't realize that once they enter a four-way stop, everyone's supposed to stop. People, like, I've almost seen this cross guard get hit like 3 or 4 times. I commend them because the stupidity out there is insane.
And then the situation I run into a lot of times is like where your leg of the intersection is a little bit wider, so you're stopped, and then someone tries to sneak by you on the right side and go their way. And yeah, in doing so, of course, you know, your vehicle is there, and you're stopped waiting for someone to go, and they try to go and almost cause an accident, or else they don't see a pedestrian and they almost hit them. Like, I've seen that happen so many times, and I'm just like, freaking wait your turn. Like, this is not a two-lane leg of the intersection where you have your own turning lane, okay? It's a single lane. You wait your turn. My gosh.
Patience is a virtue.
Sorry, you got me riled up there.
Welcome to Traffic Cast with Greg, you know. But,
you need the helicopter sound.
Greg, though, I know you have been watching a bunch, and one show I know that you caught up with that I'm really curious about is iZombie, so I've been wanting to watch it and catch it, but I never have, so curious to hear if it's actually worth checking out.
It really interesting show. It kind of starts off kind of slow and kind of like a almost typical procedural, except the lead actress is a zombie, but she's not one of those kind of like brainless zombies. Apparently in this world, if you keep up on eating brains, you actually retain your human intelligence. And so she works at an ME. She used to be a doctor, but to keep up with her brain eating habits, she kind of transfers over being an ME. She kind of breaks off with her fiance because of this happening, and she doesn't tell him that she's a zombie. So, like, there's all that weird fun stuff at the beginning, and she's kind of eating these people's brains, and when she eats the people's brains, she kind of takes on their memories. So she uses this to help solve crimes by helping solve their murders and everything like that. But the show really doesn't pick up until a little bit after halfway through the season, when the subplot becomes more of the issue throughout the story, which has to do with the guy who kind of caused the problem why she is a zombie, and you find out more of how people became a zombie, what happened. And not everybody knows in the world that zombies are out there. It's kind of, if you're a zombie, a few privileged other people know about zombies. But it really picks up in the second half when this subplot comes through. But overall, it was a lot of fun. I wouldn't say it's the most outstanding television, but it was definitely very enjoyable. The cast is great altogether. Rose McIver is a really adorable zombie. But yeah, I would definitely check it out. It's on Netflix, so yeah, you could check it out there and catch up. And I think season two is out currently.
Never thought I'd hear the phrase adorable zombie tonight.
She is an adorable zombie. Look her up, Chuck.
Yeah.
No, I see, because it comes on usually like right after Flash, I think. And is it Flash or Arrow? I forget one of them. It comes on right after, and I usually see like the first minute or two before I shut the TV off.
Funny, that's usually what happens when I watch Arrow. But
right. Yeah, anymore.
Speaking about zombies, actually, this kind of fits in one thing I did catch up with. This happened a few weeks ago, but one thing that still you know, hurts a little bit was the season finale of Walking Dead, which, Chuck, I know you caught up with as well.
Yes, I did.
And I'll be super spoiler sensitive here, because I know, Greg, you're behind, so I don't want to, you know, kind of spoil anything for you.
Well, you can boot me off and tell me on Skype when you're done.
Yeah, but I still feel like, I don't know.
And we might not get Skype working again, so let's not take a chance.
Well, I would just put off my earphones and you just type it in.
We'll see. I think we'll be fine, because I think I think you can talk without giving out specifics, but
I don't even want to say Skype too loudly, to be honest.
But I mean, there's a lot of talk about this episode going into this final season. I mean, I don't think it's a spoiler, because it's been everywhere, about Negan showing up or what that might be and what that might lead to. I am someone who's read the comics, so I kind of know what happens when he shows up in episode 100.
Kind of caught up on those as well.
In issue 100. So the question is becoming, like, does that occur into, you know, people are wondering, what does that mean for the show? And we thought we'd find out in this episode, but kind of doesn't seem to. Let's say there's no resolution there. And Chuck, what did you think of the season finale of Walking Dead?
I thought it was really exciting. It's definitely tough to talk about it spoiler free, so I guess I'll just say my favorite part was when, right as Rick is delivering Michonne's baby, he gets shot in the head.
If you said Lauren Cohan gets naked, I would lose my mind over here, Chuck.
No, seriously, it was, I don't know. I've been getting into it a little more lately, because there's some people at work that are more into it. And we have, like, usually our weekly discussions on like Monday mornings and Tuesday mornings and stuff when we talk about it. And so the anticipation was building, so to speak, and we were all really excited about seeing this episode. And I kind of watch it with my family as well and stuff. And it was definitely exciting. Like, it was suspenseful the whole way. And it was sort of a frustrating episode, the way things kept happening. I won't give anything away, but it was very, very sort of frustrating every step of the way. And we finally get to the end. I was very disappointed in not finding out, you know, what we all thought was going to be resolved. You sort of are left on this. You thought it would be a cliffhanger, even if you knew what happened, but they leave you on an even bigger cliffhanger, because, you know, something happened, but you don't know who it happened to. So now you have to hang on for 6 months or whatever it is, 6 or 7 months. And it's like this excruciating position you're in, because, like, you don't even know who this thing happened to. You don't know exactly what happened or how everyone reacted to it. And it was terrible, because it cut out, like, visually it cut out right at this part, but you still heard, like, audio going on. And it was, I've seen that happen in other shows and movies and stuff, and sometimes that's, like, really frustrating. So it was sort of a bittersweet episode, because it was a lot of high octane stuff, but it was also very frustrating at the end. So
yeah, I feel like this entire season has been frustrating for different moments. Like I don't get kind of this mood that this or this decision this season went into where it started doing all these kind of cheap tricks and cheap tactics to make you think certain characters died or got hurt. And this is like the third time it did this. It did it with the infamous dumpster moment. The episode before the last episode makes you think a character dies, and that was for no reason whatsoever, because it didn't really seem to do anything for them. It just seemed to like go away. So that was really cheap. And that's kind of the word that kind of hit my mind this season was cheap. Like these just like these things that aren't done for storytelling purposes are just done to get attention and don't really lead to anything. And this was the perfect example. Like it was like legitimately this entire season was leading up to this one moment. And then it's like, okay, well, we're going to extend that even further. Like, I don't know. I find that frustrating. I don't find that great storytelling. I don't find that, yeah, you have me wanting to watch later, but it's for not a great reason. Like, I don't know. It seemed to me just to be, either they don't know who they want it to be yet, or they're just trying to, like, stretch this out as much as possible. But, I don't know. I like the episode. Go ahead.
I was just saying, I kind of got the same feeling I do from Arrow anymore, which is just, I'm just watching so I don't get behind. Like, I'm not watching because I'm excited for it. Like I would be for Flash or something like that, where I'm like super stoked about every episode, but it's like this season of Walking Dead was kind of like, yeah, I don't want to get behind. So I have to watch it and see what happens.
Yeah. And then there'll be a good, really good episode. I'm like, oh, here we go. But if you actually look at this season,
yeah,
the amount of stuff that happened, there really isn't really much that happened, like from where they started off and where they ended. It was just, wow, that's an entire story arc. It's, I don't know, but
yeah, and I think logically some things didn't make sense either too, because I'm like, they've been in this location for quite a while now, like really the whole season, and like how have they never run into these people before? Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just like, kind of like.
Yeah.
Some leaps there, I don't know.
It's like suddenly everyone's really close to one another before, but whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some definite leaps there that were kind of weird. Like in the past seasons they were moving a lot, and even the season with the prison, like everything just made sense, but the season was just weird because it's like you're in this location for so long. Like how are you just finding out about these certain things now? It was kind of weird.
Yeah. Oh. What you gonna do? All right. Anything else before we take a quick break? All righty. What we're gonna do is take a quick break, and when we come back, we're gonna get into one of our infamous top fives as we count down our top five favorite comic book character rivalries. We'll see you in a bit.
So let's say you're looking for a podcast to your favorite 80s comic books, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Ninja Turtles, He-Man, etc. Where are you gonna go to find us?
Welcome to Star Joe's Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan.
And I'm Chuck. That's right, everybody. We're the Star Joes. We host a podcast called Star Joe's Podcast, where we talk about your favorite comic books, your favorite toys of all the 80s properties.
Star Wars, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Mask, Thundercats, Voltron, you name it, we cover it. If it's in the 80s, we'll cover it at some point.
Yeah, so what you want to do to find us, you can go to iTunes, you can go to www.starjoes.com.
And remember, the Force will be with you,
because knowing us is half the battle.
All right, and welcome back. And yes, as mentioned previously, we love our top fives here, and we are doing another one again this week. This time, our focus is on our top five favorite comic book character rivalries. Again, that is quite a mouthful. Let's start with the basics before we get into the actual list, because there's a couple of different ways of going at this. When you guys were making your list, any ideas, any methods, what were you thinking when you were putting your list together? Chuck, maybe I'll start with you. Were you thinking impact towards the genre of comic books, more so personal favorites? What was your style?
I was mostly personal favorites, but I was kind of looking at things like situations where there was two characters that were sort of like true complements of each other, maybe like, you know, if you want to say two sides of the same coin type of thing. I was looking at those types of relationships, and and seeing which ones matched up with some of my favorites.
All right. Greg, what about you? What did you look for when you were coming up with your list?
Mine wasn't really super complicated. I just kind of came up with, like, my favorite characters, who their enemies kind of were, that kind of thing, and just kind of broke it down into a top five. It was nothing too interesting in my respect of picking out. And some of them were just no-brainer kind of situations.
Yeah, I was around the same ways. When I came up with mine, I did also try to getting rivalries where the rivalry is different in the relationship to the characters. As Chuck mentioned, sometimes, you know, maybe they're too much the same, which is why they can't get along, or there's just moral enemies or something like that. So it should be fun. I think we'll probably have some crossover here for sure, but we'll try to hit on a few to see how this goes. But, well, Greg, why don't we start with you then? Looking at your list, I don't know if you ranked it or not, but what's number five?
I never really ranked it.
No. You're not a ranker. You're a lister. So what's first on your list, or last on your list, or middle of your list, really? You don't really know. It could be any direction. That's the fun of it.
Yeah, pretty much. Let's start off with one of my favorite characters, and that's Wolverine. And one of his big arch enemies is Sabretooth. And what I love about these two guys is that they're freaking almost constantly going at it, and their clashes are just gruesome. There's blood flying everywhere, especially if it's a little bit harder rated comic book, like in the Max series or something. But I don't think they ever did anything like that in the Max series with them. But still, their fights are always toeing that line of getting into a higher R rating, kind of, if comics had that kind of rating system. They have had a long history. This matchup goes through centuries. It started with Wolverine and Sabretooth when they were kids and everything. So their origins are even wrapped up kind of together, where they started off from. And it's lasted centuries thanks to their healing factor. And they totally hate each other. Like, every time you see them come in contact with each other, except for maybe when they were little and they were kind of trying to be friends and everything, but every time they come in contact with each other, it's either one or the other trying to start shit. It's never like, oh, hey, how's it going or anything. It's immediately shit talk. So they just totally hate each other. And I think one of the reasons that they do hate each other so much is that Sabretooth is what Wolverine fears in becoming. He fears becoming this more savage, deadly, murderous beast that Sabretooth is, except for lately. They switched him back over to be kind of a good guy at this time, Sabretooth, while Wolverine's dead. But,
you know, I love that. Just, you know, when he's dead, I'll come back later, though. But
yeah,
he's dead, but he's also old and a woman.
Yeah, it's weird. Another thing is they share some characteristics together. Like, they're essentially the same character, but in where it counts personality wise, they are completely different, which also adds an interesting little twist in there. So just these little things that just switch over from one character to the other make them either love each other or, like, brutally hate each other. So that, I think in that respect, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was probably my first ever comic book character rivalry, because that, you know, going back to the X-Men 90 series and seeing how much they hate each other then and how that was represented. So I'm right there with you. I think it's certainly one of the most iconic when it comes to comic books, especially since the, you know, launch of rebirth of the X-Men in the 90s. So a lot of good points. Any insight or any thoughts on that pairing of Wolverine and Sabretooth, Chuck?
That's definitely one of my favorites as well. I was really hoping somebody mentioned that. I don't know what it is, but Sabretooth's kind of like one of my favorite villains for some reason. I'm thinking that reason is probably
that's weird
because,
too, for you, Chuck.
Yeah, like
you're more of a thinking man's kind of like character liker.
Yeah, and I think it has a lot to do with the X-Men animated series from the 90s and everything, because he was in quite a few episodes of that, and even him and Wolverine were always going back and forth there. And as much of a kid show as that was, they still did a great job of depicting that rivalry in that show. You know, even you look at some of the episodes, like where they're trying to help Sabretooth because he was very badly injured in this altercation or something, and Xavier wants to help him, but then, you know, Magneto shows up, and, you know, Xavier wants to send the X-Men out to battle with him, and Wolverine's like, you know, how come we get to trash your enemy, but we gotta be all nicey-nicey to mine? And, like, just, like, it was, you could tell it was so fierce even in that cartoon, like, you know, Wolverine just hated him so much. There was quite a few episodes where they tangled, and I think that's where I really started to like Sabretooth. But yeah, I've always been intrigued by that rivalry.
Yeah, it's just a pity they haven't been able to really represent it on screen yet, all that well, unfortunately.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Liev Schreiber was okay, but I thought that left still a little bit to be desired in some of those fights. Like, you didn't get that emotional pull of, like, why they hate each other, really.
Part of it, too, I think, is even the size, having Sabretooth being this gigantic, huge figure and Wolverine being the small little runt. I mean, you really can't do that because, like, Hugh Jackman's, like, 6'8 or something, you know, he's a huge dude. So it's going to hard unless you get, like, the Big Show or, like, Shaq to play Sabretooth, which, let's be honest.
It'd be weird.
Yeah, Fox has done worse. But
if you want a Sabretooth that's really bad at foul shots, then you go Shaq.
But,
my name is Sabretooth. I'm 7'2".
Very cool.
I play in the NBA.
Yeah, starting off well with Sabretooth and Wolverine. So let's move over to you, Chuck. Now, who's number 5 on your list?
I'm going to start off my list with a DC rivalry.
Force of habit.
Not the DC movie verse. Now this is the comic, so it's okay. It's gonna be okay.
Is it Zack Snyder versus Superman?
That is becoming quite the rivalry. Let me tell you, or maybe Zack Snyder versus Superman fans would be more apt.
True.
But I think the rest of mine on my list are Marvel, so I had to sneak a DC and one in here. And I don't want to go with, like, a super obvious one. Like, obviously, everybody knows I like Superman. I'm a big fan. You could go Superman Lex, something like that. But the one I wanted to talk about was Flash versus Professor Zoom. And specifically, Eobard Thawne, I think. Basically, Barry Allen, Eobard Thawne is the rivalry. And the reason I love that so much is I love, like, speedster characters. I've always been a huge Flash fan, and the fact that you have, like, I consider Reverse Flash basically his greatest enemy. I mean, he has a lot of rogues and stuff. He has a lot of run-ins with Captain Cold and Grodd and stuff like that, but for my money, it's really Reverse Flash that's sort of his arch nemesis. And when you have somebody that can challenge you, like, they can do the exact thing you do, like, pretty much just as good as you can, that already has the makings for a great rivalry. And that's usually rare because a lot of rivalries are, like, opposite. You know, like, Superman and Lex Luthor, like, Superman is overloaded on all this power. He has so many different skill sets. Lex Luthor is just an ordinary man, but he's just super smart. So he has to figure out really inventive ways to beat him. Even, like, Batman and the Joker, Batman is a detective. He's calculated, he plans stuff out. Joker's just chaotic, and it's like whatever comes to mind. But really, like, Barry Allen and Eobard Thawne, like, they're so close that Eobard Thawne is from the future. He was a huge fan of the Flash. That was like his hero, kind of. And he's from, like, centuries in the future. So in Central City during that time, everything was like a tribute to the Flash. There's statues all over. There's museums. You know, they give tours every day and stuff of the museum. And he just grows up, like, loving the Flash. Like, that's his hero. He wants to be the Flash. And it's to the point where he actually recreates the accident that created the Flash and gave him his powers. And so he uses the cosmic treadmill to travel back in time with the dream of meeting his hero. He wants to meet Barry Allen. And that act of trying to go back in time, the cosmic treadmill sort of alters his mind and sort of drives him insane and kind of shifts him from being the person that he was to more like a little bit more evil and diabolical sort of thing. where he also learns his fate, that he's meant to die, you know, if he continues down this path. He almost, like, his mind kind of shatters, and he thinks he's becoming Barry Allen. Like, he's trying to avoid his fate, so he's doing everything to become Barry Allen. So, you know, he tries to take things away from him so that he has them. Like, he even tries to, like, take his wife, Iris, and everything like that, and he ends up killing her. And it's just this huge rivalry that spans time, basically. And, you know, Eobard Thawne keeps traveling through time to fight the Flash. He's trying to use his knowledge of history, so to speak, since he's already studied it in all of their history books and everything. He tries to use that to his advantage. Keeps going back in time to different points, and they keep battling. And it's just really, really interesting and exciting. Flashpoint Paradox, if you've never read it, is awesome. There's probably not many people that haven't read it. It's a huge recent story from DC, but if you don't feel like reading it, watch the animated movie, which was equally as good as I thought. But and then even just the Flash TV show, the first season, it's a different take on it. It's obviously a lot different than the comics, but it's still that really interesting rivalry, and they do a good job of depicting that.
That's interesting, because I don't know much about The Flash. I never really read much of it, so I had no idea that he started off as more a fan of Barry Allen and how that morphed into something else, which is interesting, because you kind of almost see the opposite of that happen with the TV show, where Eobard Thawne, like, playing the role of Harrison Wells, he, you know, almost starts this relationship with him and grows to respect him in a way. So I don't know if that was them trying to relate to it in a different way, but that's cool. I was not aware of that history. All I really know is of what I've seen in the TV show in the Flashpoint Paradox. I just assumed he was this bland, evil version of the Flash that just wants to world domination, but knowing there's a lot more to it, it's quite good.
Yeah, it's a lot deeper than it seems. And I you're right. They try to change it a little bit on the show, but they're still touching on that principle, because they're trying to make them friends. They kind of force them together, and, you know, then they're pulling the rug out from under you and everything. So it's still the same sort of thing, but, you know, those types of relationships always make for the best rivalries. So.
For my number five, I'm actually going with an Image story. Well, you know, probably one of the most infamous comics anyway, so with Walking Dead. And you know, there's a lot of great rivalries in The Walking Dead. You can go Rick and the Governor, even Michonne and the Governor, you know, Man and Zombies, because those are all part of the show. But one that I always really enjoy, because it's just, it kind of rejuvenated my interest in the series, because I was kind of, you know, I was like, okay, this is kind of getting to the point where I feel I don't know if there's much more they can do with this. And then issue 100 comes out, and Negan is introduced. And I don't think I've ever, like, hated a character in a good sense, where I just want to see Rick and him just fight all the time. I want to see Rick get his revenge on this character, but he's also really captivating. Like, him and Rick, there are certain aspects of both of them that are very much alike, but the small differences are very key. It's hugely key in how they treat one another. And when he was against the Governor, and even in the show or in the comic, I guess I never felt the Governor that threatening of a presence compared to that of Negan, where, you know, when Negan's there, you're just worried about what he can do. And without giving anything away, because what I really like about it in the comics is kind of where it goes and where it currently is at right now, because you think it's going down a certain direction. I think it's like, okay, well, this is going to happen. But the way they kind of continue the rivalry in a new way, and that's where I feel like it's really gotten to its best, because you can see these two characters exploring their relationship with one another, and even in their hatred and respect almost. But basically what you see is these two characters really being forced to confront one another, and how they almost have to coexist. I don't know. I think there's a lot of potential for the next season of Walking Dead, because I think this rivalry is great. So really looking forward to where they go with it. But it's gonna be really hard to live up to what the comic did. But I don't know.
So Dan, that's been going on for quite a few issues, right? Because what are they on right now? Like 153?
153, I think. Yeah. So yeah, it's been going on for a while. It's not like every issue since then. I would say like he comes in and comes out when necessary, but I don't know if they're going to follow the same pattern as the comics, because sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. If they do, I'd be interested, because I really think Jeffrey Dean Morgan is a great casting choice, and I did like what I saw, so I'm curious how it goes.
Awesome.
Very cool. All right, well, Greg, that moves on over to what's next on your list.
I'm also going to go out of the Marvel realm, which I'm going to stick to mostly through my answers here. But I'm going to go with The Adversary versus the Fables from the comic series Fables, Ferrest, you know, all those comics that fall, I believe, in Vertigo publishing territory. And the great thing about this rivalry is that you've got the Adversary, who is this giant mysterious foe that has kind of moved the Fables out of their land and just dominated them from the beginning, just came out of nowhere. And when it's revealed who the Adversary is, oh, that's just incredible, because you're never going to guess who it is for the most part. And then he's had the upper hand from the beginning, like I've said. And then the great thing about the Fables in all of this relationship is that they're a fish out of water in the real world when they first start off, and they kind of have to get acclimated to everything. And then it kind of comes their home, but they're still always the low man on the totem pole. It looks like they'll never get back to their homelands. And through all of this, they've kind of had to form uneasy alliances with people that, if through the fables from back in the day that we've all kind of heard of, they kind of have to join up with some of the villains from those stories. So that makes it kind of interesting. And then this is also one of those rivalries that's stood the test of time and has gone over centuries. Because you're talking back in human history, I guess around the Middle Ages. So this has been going on for centuries. I've really enjoyed the entire series. I have a little bit more left to read and to see how this rivalry is going to continue. It's gone a different route starting around the 10th through 12th graphic novel, I want to say. It's really changed, but there's still seeds of it, and it's like growing in the background. This rivalry is kind of restarting in the background, and just watching that is really interesting.
See, you're just giving me more reasons to read Fables, yet I still have yet. I know.
It's such a good series. Like, if you seriously grew up hearing all these tales and everything, especially through Disney movies, it just gives you this different view in. It's like looking through rose-colored glasses. And I think you'll especially enjoy the first volume of the graphic novel, because it's more of a detective's kind of tale, and it kind of helps you get to know some of the characters. But there's always new characters coming in, old characters coming out. So there's this huge library of characters to get to know and kind of love different ones for different reasons, and to see them grow and then fade away in different respects. So it's really good. I highly recommend the Fable series to anyone. I'm still trying to catch up. I'm reading Fables still. I have Ferris graphic novels to read yet. Definitely check out that series.
Also, yeah, I will too. I think it's even at my library, so maybe I'll have to pick it up and read it one of these days. Just
definitely,
maybe for a homework assignment back in the future. Alrighty, Chuck, moving on over to you. What's number four on your list?
Number four, I'm going to go to a rivalry that's you really can't get much closer than these two, and they're brothers, and that is Thor and Loki.
Nice. I very closely had this on my list, but I went a different direction. But what about this rivalry made it stand out for you?
To me, it's just the bitter hatred between the two, but yet they're so close, as you know, being brothers or technically stepbrothers or foster brothers or whatever you want to call it. there are times when they do things to protect each other, but for the most part, like, they pretty much hate each other. And I think the movies so far in the MCU have done a great job of highlighting this. Like, the two Thor movies really did an outstanding job. Loki was really resentful for, like, kind of how he was treated growing up, like, by the citizens of Asgard and stuff. Like, the Asgardians sort of, they really held in high esteem the things like strength and bravery in combat and things like that. And Loki just wasn't as good as Thor in those things. And Thor was, you know, he was big, he was muscular, he had great fighting skills, things like that. And Loki was more of like a thinking man, and he really was into like tricking people. He started developing his sorcery and things like that. You know, obviously became known as the god of lies and mischief. You know, not the most endearing descriptions of a person that you would want to have. So he's really kind of bitter through his whole, you know, childhood and adolescence and everything. And Thor's the next rightful king of Asgard, and Loki thinks he's more deserving because I'm pretty sure he thinks he's smarter than Thor, and he can outsmart his enemies, and he'd be a better ruler. He would know what's best for Asgard. But they just don't value those sort of things. They value more of, like, things in battle. So he just immediately seems like an outcast, feels like an outcast. And that's really what kind of just started this whole deep-rooted hatred. And when things move to Earth, Thor sort of befriends the new, you know, his new allies on Earth and everything. Loki's sort of taking the battle to them because they're helping him. So he makes it a point to try to attack them too. And foolishly, he inadvertently creates the Avengers, one of the greatest superhero teams of all time. So you have this rivalry not only resulting in great battles between Thor and Loki themselves, but you have, as a result of this rivalry, you have the development of the Avengers and all of the great battles and adventures that they've gone on against Loki and everything. So I think just for the gravity of this rivalry, like, there's so much riding on this rivalry. It started so much. They chose to make the first Avengers movie about it because that's how the Avengers first came together in the comics. And it's just too big to ignore, I think. And it's one of the greatest in all of comics.
Yeah, and what I like about that rivalry, too, is kind of what it tells you about both characters. Like, Thor has so many reasons to hate or destroy Loki, but just knowing that he's his brother, there's still this element of love there, and, like, that's kind of what holds him off and still keeps him have an element of hope and giving him chance after chance. Gives you an idea of the character of Thor, and with Loki, how he will manipulate others, and especially that of Thor, and use his love of the, you know, of Earth against him. And they've kind of gone back and forth. Like, recently in the comics, you had, like, Loki, what was it, Soldier of Asgard or something like that, where he was more of a hero, but you can never really trust him. And I don't know, I always find there's so much to that relationship. It's like almost Shakespearean in a way, in the way it's treated in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, I think Thor 2 was really cool to kind of see them work together.
Yeah,
and Thor asks for his help. You know, Loki agrees because it's in his best interest too. But you see along the way them sort of be protective of each other and sort of get worried or angry if something's about to happen to the other one or something. And those were really, really cool moments in those movies. But then, of course, by the end of the movie, you realize, like, Loki's still after his own agenda, and, you know, he has no problem basically sticking it to Thor, like, whenever he gets the chance. So
I think it's kind of interesting how the only child of the podcast went with the brotherly rivalry.
Yes.
I think that's kind of interesting. I'm not sure why, but maybe it's a psychology type of thing, but I find that to be kind of interesting.
No, it was really because other people took my rivalries for their lists. But no, I have enjoyed it more. You know, I had known the comic history before and everything, but I guess I was never into actual Thor comics. Like, I never was a big Thor reader or anything, but...
Well, the older issues are kind of dense a little
bit. Yeah, it gets... Yeah, you'd have to be, like, a really hardcore Thor fan. But, you know, the movies really sort of opened that up to me, and I'm like, wow, you know, this is a really interesting relationship, and it kind of allows you to explore that a little bit more.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, we're going to go from like a brother relationship to kind of like a father and son relationship. There's been a lot of classic father son rivalries. Of course, you know, Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker comes to mind, but this isn't maybe necessarily biological father son, but it's more mechanical in the sense of Hank Pym and Ultron. I think there's just so much to this rivalry in the sense of knowing that Hank Pym's greatest creation is also his greatest failure, and just how much this truly affects that of the character of Hank Pym so negatively, and it relates to almost the destiny of that character, that he just gets in his own way so many times, even when he has the greatest intentions, and how Ultron is probably, I guess, arguably the greatest Avengers enemy. I mean, there's a lot. I don't know who you would say, but
either him or Loki, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, some could argue Kang, maybe, but I think certainly Ultron has had a few iconic scrapes with them here and there, and just how he plays on that, and then how it all, you had a new element with Vision, and like how it becomes almost a three-way, not that type of three-way, a three-way rivalry with Vision, and how he incorporates into it, but I just always enjoyed their dynamic with one another. I know with the movies, it changed it to be Tony Stark, which I get, but the comic version of it, I think, is still probably my favorite. Just because that character of Hank Pym is so damaged, and this is probably the biggest reason why.
Yeah, I liked that one a lot. I always liked how... I liked the aspect of Hank Pym sort of worrying that this terribly evil intelligence, like, came from his own self, basically. Like, we obviously knew Hank Pym had problems and everything with how he was acting and stuff, but you never thought he would be that evil and twisted and perverse. Like, and I think it scared even himself. It was kind of like looking in a mirror that amplifies your bad points or something. 'Cause he was really, really worried about how this evil thing came from him. I always thought that was an interesting aspect of it too.
Yeah. All right, well, yeah, I always enjoy that. They haven't really got into it much lately. I don't know, maybe because with Ultron, he spreads love around, I think, when it comes to people he goes up against. But, all right, Greg, moving on over to you for your number three. What is next on your list?
Number three, we have, let me flip the page, going from a father-son rivalry to more of... bestie rivalry. I go with another X-Men characters, more X-Men characters, because, you know, me, X-Men characters. I'm going with Xavier versus Magneto. And clean your screen off, Chuck. Clean that up.
It wasn't that bad.
Okay. Do you need a tissue?
No, quite all right.
But I like the fact that they have these ideological differences, but somehow through this rivalry, they're still friends. It's just that they go different routes on their thought processes. You have Xavier, who wants to unite humans and mutants, while Magneto doesn't think that's going to work out and tries to achieve through what he thinks is a noble route, but we as the reader kind of see as evil, and that's how the writer is trying to make it come across, but still make it seem like he's on the right side. But you have him going this different route, and Xavier just keeps getting in his way because he does have the better route to run, but keeps getting in Magneto's way to stop him from doing these evils. And it just leads to the battles of their two teams, whether it's the Brotherhood or the X-Men. And I think with them being friends, it makes a lot of their decisions on how to battle each other and combat each other. It makes those decisions harder because they really don't want to kill each other, but their needs of achieving their goals are just so big that it's just a clash in their own minds too, not even against each other, but just, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but like, it's not just them against each other, it's them against themselves when it comes to making decisions on how to fight each other and how to combat each other, whether that be on the battlefield or in the mind, not literally with Xavier. But yeah, it's that whole friendship, and they've also been going at it for a while, over decades, and they have come together in some aspects and they've fallen apart. It just makes it very interesting to watch. It's like that that couple that keeps breaking up and coming back together. You question it and like, what the hell is going on with this? It just makes it more and more interesting to watch, and that's what these two are. It's just very interesting to watch, and they're basically the premise of this comic. They're the ones that move the X-Men comics along that for these past decades. It's developed into other characters taking different places currently within the past two or three decades, maybe two decades. But it's mostly been Xavier versus Magneto that's been keeping the X-Men title running for so long, and what's made me love it and have a giant X on my arm that some people think is a giant Nazi symbol. It isn't.
Yeah. Chuck, I we heard your sound effect, so thoughts on this rivalry?
My sound effect?
Greg extended it a little further, but you know.
It was more like the sound when I see like a Red Robin commercial or something like that.
Yum, is that?
No, I love that rivalry. I know we're all huge X-Men fans. And that's definitely one of my favorites. I would put that on my list too if I could. I think what I've always really enjoyed about that rivalry is that, unlike a lot of other rivalries where the two people like really hate each other, they can't stand each other, don't want anything to do with how the other person thinks, with these two guys, they really have a full understanding of each other and each other's opinions. It's not to the point where most people are just sort of so bullheaded that they, you know, they say like, you know, why can't this person just see things the way I do? Why can't they just come to realize that my way's better and, you know, my way's going to work? They do feel that way to an extent, but they both fully understand the other person's viewpoint and position on the matter of mutants and how they fit in with humanity. Like, Magneto has a ton of respect for Xavier and what he's doing for mutants. And Xavier has a ton of respect for Magneto. He knows what he went through in his childhood and the concentration camp and everything. He kind of knows where he's coming from. And they're just like, they're two warriors that just have a ton of respect for each other. And that's what I always loved about it.
Yeah, and for me, hands down, this is the best rivalry when it comes to comics. And probably in some ways, is a big reason I'm in the comics, big reason I'm even doing a podcast, because it kind of started me down this path. You know, I remember watching the X-Men cartoon, and as a time where I'm used to rivalries like Duke and Cobra Commander, one's clearly bad, one clearly evil, not much dimension there, no gray area, just one guy's the bad guy and the good guy. And then watching the 90s X-Men cartoon and seeing like, okay, he's a villain, but he's helping the X-Men. He's actually really listening to them. He's talking to them. He doesn't really see the X-Men as the enemy. They have the different views than he does. They want to stop him because of what he wants to do, but it's, I always found that really intriguing in the relationship that he has with Xavier. It's been so well represented, you know, in the cartoons, in the movies. I mean, still, you know, one of my favorite moments in that is in the X-Men First Class movie, and I think that's why that movie resonates so much with me. I think it gets that relationship really well. When you have really two great characters that have a lot of dimension to them, and then you're able to compare and really bring them together. It wouldn't work if Magneto wasn't as good of a character as he was, and Xavier wasn't as good of a character as he was. So, all right, Chuck, moving on over to you. What is next on your list?
Next up for me is, it's not going to be too much of a shocker. I think you guys pretty much know me as Joker, the cosmic guy.
No.
I think you guys pretty much know me as the cosmic guy of the three of us. Anybody that's been listening to the podcast for a while knows I'm a huge Thanos fan. And when you look at Thanos, obviously a guy like Thanos is going to have a ton of enemies. And there really are a ton of characters that that you could fit into the category as his, you know, his rival, his arch nemesis, things like that. You know, you'll think of guys like Captain Marvel, obviously. So, like, in the 70s, when Thanos was created by Starlin, and he started, you know, crafting some stories with him, the Cosmic Cube and things like that, Captain Marvel was the main hero that was fighting Thanos. And there were a ton of huge stories that dealt with those two kind of just going at it back and forth. And they were both very powerful, both completely opposite people. You know, one's definitely good, one's definitely evil for sure, but I still think Thanos had admired him and things like that. But he had the passing of Captain Marvel in that story in the 80s, which was huge.
Spoiler alerts, Chuck.
Yeah, if it happened like 30 some years ago, so if you don't know about it, then tough noogies. So you have Captain Marvel sort of passing on, and someone sort of has to take his place. So to me, the person that fills that void is kind of Adam Warlock. And I think since then has sort of done even more stories and been in more adventures and battles and different things with Thanos. So that's the reason I'm going with Adam Warlock and Thanos for this rivalry. And I would almost describe them as frenemies. Sort of like
the first, you know, yeah, I could see that.
It's really not like Xavier and Magneto. It's not like they were best buds at one time and then they just kind of split apart. It is like that, however, in that both guys have a huge amount of respect for each other. There's plenty of stories where they end up on the same side, Thanos and Warlock working together. So in that aspect, they have a ton of respect for each other. They know what the other person's capable of. They're capable of great feats and really complex schemes and things like that. So I think Thanos actually, Warlock is one of the few people he really holds in high esteem. Like, he has a ton of respect for Warlock. And I think it's the one guy that he's almost like happy to go up against because he knows it's going to be a challenge. And Thanos is so used to kind of mopping the floor with everyone that he goes up against. You look at, you know, obviously Infinity Gauntlet was probably the most popular story with Thanos. Warlock was a huge part of that story in helping the heroes and kind of defeat Thanos and get the gauntlet away from him. When you go to Infinity War, now you see them sort of on the same side as they fight the evil half of Warlock's personality, nice. The Magus. And so they kind of go back and forth in different stories on each other's, you know, on their side, against each other. And there's been some really cool stories where Thanos is actually opening up to Warlock and he's sort of like talking about his life and stuff like that. And it's like just stuff that you really wouldn't expect, but you don't see him interact with anybody quite like he does with Warlock. So I just always thought that was a really interesting rivalry to note. I thought it was worthy of my list.
Yeah, I wish I've read more of that rivalry. I mean, I've gotten pieces here and there with like Infinity Gauntlet and enjoyed that, and I do like their dynamic with one another. They kind of recognize the necessity of each other in a way, but they kind of just keep each other in check, like you mentioned. So, and Warlock's always, I don't know, a lot of an underrated character. I know with, what is the Starlin series that's currently out? Infinity Entity?
Yeah.
he's being
Infinity Entity.
Infinity Entity. He's being utilized more, but I almost wish they've done more with him, and I'm really hoping that we finally see him in the Marvel, you know, cinematic universe in some way, because I feel like,
yes, that would be awesome.
If we're gonna do the Infinity Gauntlet, you kind of need him, because like you said, him and Thanos kind of go hand in hand since Captain Marvel passed away. Spoiler alert. One of the few characters that's actually stayed dead in the Marvel comic universe.
Yeah, really. That's a good point.
Well, I mentioned earlier with how much the impact of Professor Xavier and Magneto had in my childhood when it came to getting in love with the X-Men. Well, there was a rivalry before that, too. That is comic book related. Well, though this is a comic book rivalry, I first came to know it mostly because of the 1990s and 80s TV show, and that's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Shredder. We've been talking a lot about all these strong relationships, all these different dynamics. This one, I'll be honest, is maybe doesn't have that to the same extent, but I just think they're two different characters that go hand in hand with one another. They're tied with their fate. Like, if I'm seeing the Turtles, I'm hoping I'm seeing some form of Shredder. His hatred of Turtles, which is random, and I enjoy the different versions of Shredder, if he's more cartoonish to the more kick-ass version in some of the later series. And the recent IDW series, I really liked what they did, and they added a lot of history between Shredder and the Turtles, and of course you got to include Splinter in that as well, where there's almost like a reincarnation element of it too, so it's just really this rivalry that's gone through centuries, which is kind of cool, and it sounds dumb on paper, but it actually ends up working really well, and just the classic martial arts type of face-off, but instead of being, you know, two humans, it's a dude dressed up as a tin can and teenage turtles. So, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's probably not the most, maybe sophomoric compared to some of the other ones, but I still think it's impactful when it comes to me and my love of comics.
Yeah, that's a great one. You got to have the Shredder and the Turtles in there. You know, I was actually thinking about that one, too.
Greg, I'm guessing, you know, you grew up at the same time, so I'm sure the Shredder and the Turtles also impacted you in some way.
Oh, yeah. I'm still trying to make my way through the party wagon of DVDs of the animated series, which hasn't been going so well. It hasn't lived up to nostalgia.
Yeah,
it's a little tough to get through as an adult. But, yeah, definitely I loved seeing those two go at it. I would kind of think Krang is kind of up there, but it's... Yeah. It's still, it doesn't have that history that Splinter and Shredder have of going against each other and everything, and how like one's pure evil, the other's pure good, and all that kind of stuff. It's just great, and it's definitely one of the ones I grew up with. But I think I've kind of grown past that, especially since the new movies and how they've kind of portrayed the relationship.
Yeah, yeah. The new movie really ruined Shredder in a lot of different ways. Yeah, it is very black and white, like we said, but I think it's still fun. I still think it's their dynamic's interesting, and I've actually, the Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle crossover, actually kind of enjoyed how he fits into the Batman universe as well with Shredder. It's quite a good series. I would advise picking that up if you have the chance. But all right, wrapping it round back over, we're already kind of up there. We're at our number twos. So, Greg, what's next on your list?
I'm sticking with X-Men here, Dan. You're like, who else does Greg have to mention from X-Men, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Is it Jubilee and being interesting?
No. But it's something that you'll probably enjoy from the 90s cartoons. And it hasn't really been struck out as much in comics.
I think I know.
Oh, Chuck, you want to hazard a guess?
I will guess. I'm going to say Wolverine Cyclops.
Very good, Chuck.
Nice.
I am shocked, surprised, and very happy that you got that right.
I actually, that one crossed my mind as well.
Really? Okay, cool. But yeah, Cyclops versus Wolverine. I loved their little back and forth in the animated series. That was kind of their angst over each other, because they both love the same woman. They both have infatuation with Jean Grey. Cyclops has her. Wolverine wants her. That kind of goes back and forth. There's this nice little love triangle going on there. And I think it was the first love triangle that I've really heard of in my life. It was the first one that I've kind of experienced, I guess. I don't know what I want to say, but
I think for me it might have been the Pink Ranger, the Red Ranger, and the Green Ranger. I think that was if they had a little triangle. I don't even remember.
They kind of did, but it played off more friendly.
She got around, is what we're saying.
Yeah, but in the comic books now, they're kind of playing that up. Now, which I highly recommend. That's a really good read. But back to Cyclops and Wolverine. They also had different views on how the team should be run, which you see a lot of that in the animated series, where they go out looking for Morph, and it's they come back looking for Morph, and Wolverine's pissed that they don't keep looking for him and that they've given up and all this stuff, and he's given Cyclops a lot of crap. But that's also because Wolverine does not care for authority figures, especially since higher ups in Canadian government and more shadowy figures, authoritative figures, have tortured him with giving him an adamantium skeleton and played with his mind so much. So you've got that going on. But they also kind of go beyond that a little bit, too, and it kind of becomes this giant pissing competition a little bit. It's more on Wolverine's side that it becomes a pissing competition, but it's still great to see play out. One of my favorites ever of seeing them together is actually the first movie and them going through the metal detector. And Cyclops kind of laughing at Wolverine, who gets picked up by the metal detector going off, and Wolverine kind of flipping Cyclops the middle claw. It's just great, and that movie was great to see their relationship back and forth. I think that's one of the better examples of it.
I love the little jabs he throws into the subtle ones, like,
oh yeah,
he'll say like, keep your eye open, like,
yeah,
instead of eyes.
It's just great, like, and a lot things of fun. This one is more of a fun one because, you know, at the end of the day, they're gonna come together and fight for what's right. Except for maybe now, because Cyclops is kind of,
yeah.
and plus apparently he's dead too or something. I don't know exactly what. What's going on there? I apparently missed a couple.
Spoiler alert! Jeez.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, yeah, it's kind of, you don't even know why yet. It's weird. No, they haven't explained it. So
okay, they haven't. Yeah. All right, I thought I missed a comic or something. I was confused.
No, they have not. But I think one of my favorite moments of it's kind of small, but it's one of the first episodes. I think it's like Night of the Sentinels, and Cyclops is just trying to ream out Wolverine, and then he just punched him right in the stomach. Like, right when he's, like, mid sentence, and then he pulls out his claws, he's like, next time I'm using these, and then walks away. I'm like, that sums up the relationship perfectly.
So. Yeah, that relationship's a lot of fun. So that's a fun rivalry. So that kind of goes, adds a lot to it, too. So I guess if I was going to put that somewhere on a list, I would have it up a little bit higher on the list. And I guess that's why I'm mentioning it so late here.
All right. So, Chuck, we've had a lot of different types of rivalries. We had father-son, almost brothers, frenemies, more friends than enemies. What's next on your list?
Yes, my number two is it's going to be a little weird. I think you guys might kind of be shocked at this one because you're going to say it's not really a rivalry, but it's kind of a rivalry in a weird way, and it's because of that weird way is why I'm picking it from my list, and that is Silver Surfer and Galactus.
Haha, nice.
Yes,
consider that a rivalry.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I thought maybe I was the only one kind of thinking of it that way, but
it's kind of gone back and forth, you know. The
yeah, and that's really what's intriguing about it, because I've kind of described it as like a love-hate relationship sort of thing. You know, obviously, way back in the beginning, Galactus comes to Zen-La, which is Norrin Rad's home planet. And in order to save his planet and to save his love, Shalabal, he offers to serve Galactus and find him new worlds to consume if he will basically spare their planet. And it really starts there, because the Surfer has these intentions that, okay, I'm going to find him worlds that are uninhabited but still have the kind of energy that he needs to rejuvenate himself. So he has the best of intentions. But when he's transformed into the Silver Surfer, Galactus really, like, messes with his mind and kind of twists his mind. So his memories are all goofed up. His memories are really sort of buried deep, and he doesn't remember them for the longest time. And he really doesn't stick to that, you know, that intention that he had of finding uninhabited worlds. So, but it's really not his fault. And classic Silver Surfer, though, he always blames himself for those things. And he's really like a tortured soul. He's a noble soul, though. He's one of the few characters that I can really like put in the same category with people like Captain America and Superman and Thor and some characters like that that are really selfless and really aren't interested in any accolades whatsoever. They just want to do what's right for their loved ones and for the universe and everything. So I've always loved Silver Surfer in that way. And it's just this really interesting dynamic, because he's always meant to do things the right way, but the way Galactus messed with his head, he really wasn't able to. And he's always blamed himself, but he's always like sort of had this deep hatred of Galactus, in my opinion. But then in the same weird way, he has this sort of love for Galactus as well. And we've seen many times throughout the years where he actually, you know, he's been free of being Galactus's herald, but he goes back to it. There's been times when Galactus was in trouble and he needed a herald, you know, he didn't have one. And without one, it was going to be difficult for him to find the planets that he needed to survive. So Silver Surfer sort of went back with him to help him. So it's this really strange relationship that continues to get explored in different ways. Now, I'm not up on, I guess, the newest stories. I guess they're on I think they're on like the 8th volume of Silver Surfer. They keep sort of starting it over and stuff like that. I did read one. I think it was Silver Surfer Devolution or something like that, or however you want to say it. That one was from a few years back. That was interesting, where it seems like he had forgotten about Shalabal and he had like this new love interest and stuff, but I haven't read a whole lot of the new Silver Surfer stuff, so I'm not quite sure where that relationship is right now. But I know from the things I've read from the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, stuff like that, that was always a really, really interesting relationship between him and Galactus. And I was always looking forward to see where they would take that next. It seemed like when push came to shove and Galactus was really in trouble, and a few times he actually can get into trouble because of how powerful he is, Silver Surfer is usually there to try to like protect him and try to save him. But I still think deep down he sort of still hates him for what he did and how he took him away from his true love, Shalabal, on his home world and everything. And I guess for those, one of many reasons, those are two of my most favorite characters.
The new series, the new Dan Slott series, I've read some of it. They touched on Galactus a little bit. It's interesting. It's a different take, I would say, tonally, with the character. It feels like a 70s almost acid trip, but not to that extent, I guess. But I actually really like it. It's quite weird and strange. I don't know if it would be something you would enjoy, because I think it's definitely a little bit more humorous in a way. Like it's kind of got a slight more humor take, but it's a strange book, but I actually quite enjoy it. Even the art style is quite good.
I think associated humor with Silver Surfer at all.
Yeah, he's not like funny. It's not like funny, not funny, haha. But it's not like, you know, laugh out loud, like jokey. But it's just, I don't know. It's just the way it's written. It's hard to explain. It's, you know, it's Dan Slott, so he's got his own take on it. But I would say give it an issue or two, and if you don't like it, you probably won't like any of it. But if you do, you'll see. But yeah, I mean, that is a a good relationship, because Galactus is such an intriguing figure because he's not necessarily evil or good. He's just this force of nature, and seeing Silver Surfer having to interact with him in different ways. And I think by far, when it comes to all the heralds of Galactus, Silver Surfer and him have always had a relationship that's deeper and more respectful than his other ones. I'm assuming that
he's more loyal than any of the other heralds have been.
Yeah, yeah.
So far.
Yeah, and I think probably he has more respect for Surfer than the others. Even though he did turn on him, I think he at least sees the reason behind it. I guess I don't know. It's
yeah.
Because you got to think about it. Like, he could kill the Surfer if he wanted to, but he just decides not to. So
yeah.
Very cool. All right. Well, it's interesting. Like, you guys are talking about all these more dynamic and layered rivalries, and I feel like with my last one, really just good and evil, and kind of this one too, though perhaps in the more recent years or so, it's expanded upon that. But I think it's one of the most iconic rivalries when it comes to comics, possibly one of the first, and one that expands upon comics. And it's that of Red Skull and Captain America. You know, Captain America being one of my all-time favorite characters, and Red Skull being his arch nemesis. And you talk about characters and rivalries where you have those that they're very similar. You know, they're the frenemies per se. This is not that. These are two people who are pretty much morally opposed to each other in every way possible. They are the exact opposite. You know, they are 180 degrees separation from one another. You have pure evil versus pure good, the Boy Scout versus, you know, a glorified Satan or Hitler, the guy who represents American values, the character that represents everything that's wrong with the world. So they are, you know, almost destined to fight one another. They've both survived death on multiple occasions. You know, these people who started their rivalry back in World War II and still going to this day. And recently, I think it's kind of gone further. There's been a few little cool twists here and there with it, with Red Skull getting the brain of Charles Xavier. And so I had to put him on this list. Like I said, it may not be as complex as the Xavier Magneto relationship, but I think it's just as important.
Yeah. I've always loved that, that rivalry too. And I know we've talked about this in the past, but a lot of times when I think of Captain America and Red Skull, obviously we've been influenced a lot by animated series growing up and stuff like that. But a lot of the times I think back to the Spider-Man animated series where they did that story arc at the end with the Red Skull. That was amazing. Like, you know, and the fact that they had, I think there was one point where they discussed them, like, you know, Captain America and Red Skull sort of were trapped in limbo for like decades or something, and they were locked in battle, and they were fighting and battling this whole time. I mean, that's the sort of like deep fire of hatred, like, for each other that these guys have. Like, it's not something like any of the other rivalries we've talked about today. Like, it's just, it's totally different. Like, anything that would keep these guys locked in combat for decades, so to speak, even though that didn't really happen in the comics, but it sort of has over time. If you think about it, they've really been going at it. So it's sort of like a metaphor for that, but. And I think that's a really good example of just how much these guys oppose one another.
Cool, cool. All right, we're down to our last one. Greg, what is last on your list?
Last is one I don't think anybody's really thought of, and this time I went out of the X-Men realm. Thank you. So I went with another character that I've really enjoyed throughout the years. I haven't read as much of his stuff as of late, and he's not even really around that much anymore, but I'm going with the Hulk versus General Thunderbolt Ross. Thank you. What I like about their relationship is they're on two different scales of power. Hulk is very strong. Ross is just a normal guy, and but you've got Hulk, who's all by himself, and you've got Ross, who's got this army and this government behind him to hunt down, and he's constantly going after the Hulk. It's an obsession to bring down the Hulk. And these guys didn't even like each other to begin with. Even with Bruce Banner, Ross didn't like Banner. Now, and he changed into the Hulk and he doesn't like the Hulk. He thinks he's a menace. It's kind of like J. Jonah Jameson and Spider-Man, except a little bit more brutal and deadly. Which maybe that should have been on the list, J. Jonah and Spider-Man.
That's funny you say that. That was on my list, but I replaced it when we did the Joker incarnation. So that was the one I was a little bit hesitant on. So,
but you've got the Ross going after Hulk constantly, and all Hulk wants to do is be left alone. But you've got freaking Ross poking him with the stick all the time like a giant dumbass, and so Ross will do almost anything to bring down the Hulk. Like, it's the lengths that he goes to are extreme. Like, citizens can die. Like, anything goes for Ross to claim his mission.
Changing himself into another Hulk.
Yeah, changing himself into something he dislikes, completely hates.
It's kind of funny when you see it, like when he's able to make like the U.S. Army the villain, and the one thing that like Hulk has always kind of had, you're like, oh well, who's Hulk's, you know, nemesis, and people would be like the leader, but really it is Thunderbolt Ross, because it's really the one guy he was always constantly trying to bring him down, and
essentially the military is kind of the reason that the Hulk is in existence, why Bruce Banner became the Hulk. It was a military test that changed him, so you got that kind of little aspect going. I know he went out to help save and his name's not coming to me, Rick Jones.
Rick James, bitch? No, that's not it.
It was Rick James. But yeah, he goes out to save him, but it is essentially a military test that kind of formed him, and so that's another aspect of why Banner should hate the military, but he's more afraid of it than anything else and afraid of hurting anybody. So that's another interesting aspect to the relationship, but I've always liked the Hulk as a character, and I used to read him a lot more, but that was definitely one of the rivalries that I always enjoyed watching, the intensity of Thunderbolt Ross coming after the Hulk, who just leave him alone. He won't do anything if you don't poke him with a stick.
Yeah, I mean, don't poke the Hulk with a stick. That's today's lesson. So, awesome. All right, Chuck, moving on over to you. A lot of rivalries to choose from. What's number one on your list?
Oof. Number one takes me way back when I first got into comics. I guess my first favorite character was Spider-Man. And I think one of the earliest rivalries, if not the earliest one I can remember, and one that really got me deeply cemented into comics and exploring it more, was the rivalry between Spider-Man and Green Goblin.
Nice.
And yeah. That really is, when you really break it down, it's Spider-Man's greatest enemy for a lot of reasons. I think, you know, he has obviously a huge rogues gallery, a ton of great villains. I love the Spidey villains, probably rivaled only by like the Batman villains as far as like a extensiveness in the rogues gallery. But, you know, obviously I love characters like Venom and Carnage and all those, but Goblin goes way back, and Norman Osborn, to be more specific. And you look at the relationship, like, obviously Peter had with Harry, and this being Harry's father, you know, presents this huge obstacle. Like, when they kind of figure out who each other is, you obviously have Green Goblin being responsible for the death of Spider-Man's girlfriend, you know, his first really true love, a huge watershed moment in comics. Like all the great comic readers will tell you, like, that they remember that moment. It's one of the most shocking in comics. And obviously when you take it further to, you know, Harry becoming the Green Goblin, and that relationship got even more complex because it wasn't your best friend's father, now it is your best friend, and you start kind of becoming a little bit like Xavier and Magneto in a way. And you have, like, you remember the story where, you know, Green Goblin sort of, the Harry Green Goblin sort of saved Spider-Man from, I think there was a burning building or something like that. And he ended up saving Spider-Man's life. And sort of sacrificing himself. So just the history of the Green Goblin, Spidey, whether it's Norman, you know, killing Gwen Stacy, or whether it's him battling Harry and struggling with their relationship and stuff like that. It's just one of the absolute greatest rivalries in all of comics. And it's something that got me really interested in comics when I started reading them and stuff, and kind of made a neat foundation for me to kind of get started on.
Yeah, I think great rivalries have iconic moments, and certainly that has one of the most iconic moments of all time when it comes to comic books, so definitely deserves to be mentioned. And when you talk about iconic moments, a lot of people are like, Are they gonna do it? Are they forgetting one? A lot of ones people are, you know, there's a lot to choose from. Some probably we're gonna miss, but if it seems fitting that we will end with this one, as number one on my list and last on my list is none other than, of course, of Batman and Joker. How could you not mention it? It is the rivalry probably most infamous when it comes to comics. The one, if you ask anyone on the street,
oh, yes,
give us two characters that hate each other the most, give us a rivalry, the most important one in comics, it's the one people are going to go to. There are many reasons why. There are so many things to get into. You could probably have a podcast just on this relationship and what they mean to one another, the different versions of it, from the Killing Joke to, you know, to the Dark Knight. There are so many reasons why this is resonated with people throughout the years. You know, we've seen very different versions of Batman, we've seen different versions of Joker, but ultimately they all kind of share some similarities with one another. So I guess maybe we can talk, do you guys have any favorite moments when it comes to the Batman Joker rivalry? Anything that comes to mind when you think of them, what pops into your head?
I'd go with one of their latest clashes, and I'm going to mess up the title, Death of the Family, Death in the Family. It's something like that. There's another Death of Family title out there, but I'm talking about this latest thing written by Scott Snyder, where the epic battle that they have, where Joker has like all of the Bat family kind of laid out there, and he's got Batman literally up against, well, not literally up against the wall, but up against the wall, and the battle there of kind of wits and strength. It was just an awesome battle that they have going, and that they know each other so intimately. And the fact that Bruce talks about he went to Arkham as Bruce Wayne, and he went up to the Joker's cell and started talking to him about something that Batman was trying to solve with about the Joker. And the Joker didn't even like look at him, didn't do anything. He just kind of ignored him, because it was like, I'm not looking for Bruce Wayne to come at me. I'm looking for Batman. Like, he wouldn't acknowledge Bruce Wayne at all, but as Batman, he totally acknowledges and goes totally cutthroat. So I thought that was kind of an interesting look at their relationship that hasn't really been seen before.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, Chuck, anything that comes to mind?
I don't know. I really liked the Killing Joke. That was a really cool story. Obviously, Under the Red Hood with the whole Jason Todd thing, which was from Death in the Family and everything. Those are all great stories. Really enjoyed those a lot. Enjoyed in the Killing Joke, like them sort of giving a little bit of an origin of the Joker. You know, even though it might not be completely canon, but it's like it's sort of a peek into what his life could have been before he was the Joker. I always thought that was interesting. I enjoyed that a great deal. But yeah, the Joker is just, he just represents pure chaos and randomness. And like, I think one of many reasons that they go so well together, you know, him and Batman, is that, you know, Batman's parents were just seemingly chosen at random by this thug that, you know, shot them in the alley. And, you know, the Joker sort of like his random acts of evil and all of those things just sort of keep bringing that back to Batman. I think this kind of keeps bringing it up to him and stuff like that. Like, he hates randomness and chaos and stuff. Like, he's just sort of strives for order and things like that. So even though, like, you know, he doesn't shy away from using fear tactics and you know, his whole persona is based on that, but he does want to see like some order and justice and stuff like that. So really interesting sides of the coin there, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, I think there's, honestly, it's kind of cheating, but one of the, I think, moments that maybe sums it up the most is that infamous speech by Alfred in The Dark Knight about, you know, man wanting seeing the world burn and just seeing what that means in relation to Batman, this guy that is so bent on finding the motivations of people and reason and logic, and when the person's completely absent of that, I mean, they're very, you know, great complements of one another in that way, in the sense of they are true rivals because Joker's strengths are Batman's weaknesses. It's not necessarily kryptonite, but it's just taking what he uses, you typically uses to succeed against everyone else, and it's why he tends to fail when it comes to going against the Joker. So randomly that a dude dressed up as a bat and a guy dressed up as a clown could be such a great story and great, you know, a great starting point for some of the best literature in all of literature in the last, you know, 50 years or so. So strange world we live in, I guess. You guys have any other honorable mentions that maybe we didn't bring up, but you thought, you know, were close to making your list?
Yeah, some. I guess one I would definitely bring up is Reed Richards and Doctor Doom.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah,
that's definitely a cool one. You have, like, you know, again, sort of, I guess not the best of friends, but sort of friends in college roommates, and studying together, and, you know, things go awry, and suddenly Doctor Doom hates him for the rest of his life.
as might happen.
But that one, just more so because of Doom, because I love Doom as a villain. He's one of my favorites. I'm not the biggest Fantastic Four fan, but I do enjoy Doctor Doom quite a bit. I guess I would also throw in, obviously, Superman and Luthor is a great one. I think Hal Jordan and Sinestro is another great one.
This is so hard because there's so many different lanterns. It's like, it kind of hurts it a little bit, you know.
I think Hal Jordan's get the one, though. He's got to be, you know, that's the rivalry, because those two didn't like each other even when they were on the same side.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then now you have, you know, Sinestro forming his own core, the Sinestro core, and it's just like this huge, huge rivalry now. That one always captivated me. And then I guess some ones you wouldn't think of, maybe like The Thing and The Hulk.
Yeah, I actually had that as an honorable mention.
That's a pretty cool one. They're always, you know, kind of duking it out. That one goes way back to.
Yeah, I didn't put that one because I feel like it's just like it's ultimately just them punching each other, but it's still
kind of
yeah. That's pretty much why I didn't make my list. I don't want to take them all here. I'll just mention like two more. But Captain Marvel and Black Adam is another great one, and Deathstroke and Nightwing. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Like, well, really the whole Teen Titans, but, you know, Nightwing for the most part. So.
Greg,
there's some other great ones, obviously.
Greg,
Baron von Zemo.
Yeah,
I just think Zemo is a really cool villain. I wish you could see more from him. Oh, I just had one in my head, and now it just poof out of it. Oh, Deadpool versus Taskmaster. That's another frenemy kind of situation that I always liked in the comic. There was a one where Taskmaster goes, yeah, everybody thinks you're a goofy guy, but he's like, I know you've got like skill and everything, and paid respect to Deadpool, and but they've gone at it back and forth through the years, which was really cool to me. Let's see, I like recently they had in Batgirl, they had a villain come in that was really cool. It was Batgirl versus, and I forget his name at this point. I think it started with a D or something. Let me look it up real quick.
Okay. Well, you look at that. I had a few too that didn't come up. I thought about the Skrulls and the Kree. You know, it's not necessarily a character rivalry, but, you know, races that hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
Some X-Men related ones. You know, Apocalypse has a lot of great ones. You can link him to, you know, Archangel, to even Cable. They have a pretty storied rivalry. Mr. Sinister and Cyclops. Or even, like, you know, the whole Gray family and, you know, their back and forth and mm-hmm. what that's led to and whatnot and how that craziness.
Surely one of you guys was going to mention Daredevil and Kingpin, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You could even do Daredevil and Bullseye, of course. And
Yeah.
So the
Elektra and Bullseye.
Yeah. You mentioned Superman and Lex Luthor. You had Superman and Brainiac. He's got a few as well, so they can go on.
Does Wonder Woman have a really big arch enemy?
Cheetah?
Cheetah is her main enemy, I think.
Sounds kind of lame.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of lame. So.
Yeah, especially since the original Cheetah made her costume out of a cheetah rug.
That's kind of lame.
The character I'm thinking of, he essentially takes over Barbara's mind and makes her question her everything that's going on. So that was kind of an interesting take.
Very cool. Very cool.
I always loved. I brought it up before, but I always loved Spider-Man and Venom as well.
Yeah.
Venom's, because of the symbiote was once on Peter. He understands Peter like really no one else does, so that one's always been really, really cool.
Yeah, even Spider-Man and Doc Ock, because they have a kind of a relationship there, and especially after Doc Ock took over the body of Spider-Man, that was so. Yeah. There, you always...
How about Batman versus Catwoman?
Yeah, that's another frenemy, definitely. But frenemy with benefits. Frenemy with benefits is what you can call that. So. But yeah, we can go on. I mean, there's probably tons and tons we haven't come up with. I'm sure people are yelling at their screen or yelling at their phone that, you know, the major ones we didn't bring up. But if you do want to let us know what you thought of the ones we had or some of your favorites, you can get in contact with us with a number of different ways. You can email us at feedback@geekcastradio.com or talkinginCircles@live.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter as well. Just search Talking in Circles, GCRN. You guys are also on Twitter. What are your Twitter names?
I am at Heroic Age Chuck.
And I am at The Create Forge.
And I am at Movie Revolt. But that'll be it for this week. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel, same podcast feed. But for now,
this has been Chuck.
This has been Greg, or your greatest enemy.
Oh no, I'm scared. And this has been Dan, and we've been Talking in Circles. We'll see you next week.
My greatest enemy. Hello, Daniel. You will be mine.
pretty solemn nautical laughter there.
Thank you. Thanks. Appreciate it. I very much cherish my villainous laugh. I've been working on it a while. Been trying to get it out there at award show season so I could win an Oscar or something.
You gotta find the opportune times to put that. You can't just, you know, throw it in there whenever. It's gotta make sense.
Yeah, and I think it made sense there. It totally did. That's why it took me over 100 episodes to.
Yeah. It works.